Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Today's Carolla Classics is brought to you by Pure Talk. If your cellular plan is with Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, you're paying way too much for the exact same coverage you get with Pure Talk. Look where your bill shows the data usage. The average person uses less than 4 gigs a month, but big carriers charge for unlimited data. Pure Talk saves the average person over $400 a year. Unlimited talk, text, and 2 gigs of data, all for just $20 a month. And if you go over your data usage, they don't charge for it. So go to puretalkusa.com, enter promo code ADAMPODCAST, and save 50% off your first month. That's puretalkusa.com, promo code ADAMPODCAST. Pure Talk. Simply smarter. Wireless. Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for October 31st, 2020. Happy Halloween. Thanks for tuning in to this podcast. This is the show where we highlight some of the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. Almost 3,000 episodes of podcasting. And we got some great clips for you right here. My name is Chris Loxamon, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
I was going to do a spooky intro, but then I figured Adam might make fun of me, so I decided not to.
Yeah, thanks for with all the... Before we get going with the first clip, speaking of spooky, don't forget about Geico-ween. Want to know more about it? Just switch to Geico and save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Check out geico.com. Now, let's get going with something that's really scary. And that's RCS, Gio.
Oh, yeah, it's a tragedy. It strikes millions of men, billions, some would say.
Yeah. And Adam made everybody hip to it back in the beginning of 2018.
He's a hero.
Let's listen.
I thought I was the only one.
I told myself I was in control.
It was constant, unrelenting.
I felt trapped, helpless.
I just can't make it stop.
I tried pills and drugs, but that only made it worse.
My name is Kalen.
Dylan.
Matt.
Dawson.
Gary.
Chris.
And I suffer from...
I suffer from...
I suffer from...
I suffer from...
I suffer from RCS. Restless cock syndrome.
People think RCS is a joke.
They laugh when they hear what it stands for.
What they don't hear is the crying I do at night, knowing tomorrow will be another waking nightmare.
I can't live like this anymore, but now I know there's help.
Hi, I'm Dr. Drew, and I've helped countless men who have suffered from RCS, Restless Cock Syndrome. It's not a joke. It is a serious condition that affects 3.8 billion men, and they suffer each and every day. You are not alone. You are not a monster. Call your doctor now and set up help. You can get it to stop. You can tell it no. You can take back control and get help today.
You see, Gio, it's a serious, serious issue.
I've been suffering with it my whole life.
Me too. Oh, it feels so good to say that and just put it out there.
Feels good metaphorically. Physically, it never feels good. Except those times it does feel good.
Before we get going with the next clip, Gio, what can you tell us about that PSA?
It first aired on Adam Carolla Show 2233, for all you numerology fans. It featured Brian Koppelman, who I love. I've loved since Rounders. I was obsessed with that movie. I've been a Koppelman fan since the late 90s, just like Carolla. You guys produced this fabulous bit. It aired in January of 2018, so it's not that old. And I think you've talked about it before. We've played the whole that clip and then more of the interview and some of the news or something from that episode. But for people who haven't heard that, how did you guys assemble that and produce that?
So this was my first year of being the producer, and Adam talked about RCS as a joke on the show. And this is kind of my way of showing Adam and the audience, like, okay, I'm going to try to do something here and take a little bit more of a risk. And I spent the entire afternoon working on this PSA and getting people to record it. And we assembled it. and we had a really good writer at the time, Dylan, who worked on it as well, and it turned out really, really good to where we ended up playing it a few times during the year. So
you should create more time for yourself, you know, with some sort of time tunnel, because it was great, and the effort shows, and the production value shows, and it's still hilarious. So it really holds up, and like if you'd really shat it out, we might not be listening to it today, or be like, oh, that was kind of funny, but you really honored the premise, and you kind of enhanced it.
Yeah. And Dr. Drew being in it really, really solidified the bit.
That was perfect.
All right, let's get going with our next clip. This is from April of 2014, a little slice of life with a show opening. And Adam talks about a classic hockey movie, Youngblood.
Adam Carolla Show 1313 featuring Quentin Rampage Jackson. He's not in this portion. Allison Rose and Brian Bishop. It's from April of 2014. They did three episodes back to back because Adam was filming the movie. They're doing with the Patton Troll stuff all at the same time. And this was, I believe, the second of three recordings in between Alicia Witt and another dude. And this is the opening of the show and the Youngblood discussion. Check it out.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest tonight, Rampage Jackson, plus Allison Rosen on news, and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, a man who also played B.A. Baracus in a racist Halloween costume, Adam Carolla.
It is true. I did shave my head. Yeah, get it on. Gotta get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show and clicking through Amazon and helping with the fund anything and all that good stuff. We do appreciate it. Thank you for hanging with me in these few weeks where we're shooting the movie and the schedule's all fucked up. And thanks to all the people that are filling in and doing such a great job. Good to see you, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
In Bald Brian.
Pussy Lips.
It's been too long, and at BricksJohn wanted that on Twitter with the hashtag TopDrop.
I was B.A. Baracus, by the way, in about 20. And it was it was a different time. But if you were impersonating somebody who was on TV, it did not matter what race you were and what race they were.
Sure.
You were dressing as that person. And that's just the way it was. And nobody thought anything of it. And they were right not to think anything of it because it didn't mean anything. I thought the A-Team was cool.
Well, and, you in America.
And thus, I wanted to dress like the cool guy from the A-Team who happened to be black, and I wasn't, and that was part of the outfit.
But you were committing.
Yeah. I don't know when, you know, I do understand the racial attacks and how they should be, you know, interpreted, but I don't understand the homage-y stuff, like the I like this person, I want to look like that person or be like that person. And people go, you don't understand how offensive that is to. Why? Why does it have
to be? You don't understand how offensive that is to other white people.
Right. Other white people who have to act outraged. I don't think that any black person is truly upset, unless they're in that business of being upset, that you're picking someone on TV who you look up to or you idolize or you think is cool and then dressing like that person. And back when I did it, no one else did either. It was just that's the guy from A-Team.
If you're going as a black guy, that might be – that's offensive. But if you're going as a specific character, a person, paying homage.
Yeah.
In a racist way.
That's how it worked. All right. Bald Brian's book is out as we speak. Baldywood is just around the corner. What I expect, if I were expecting, from Allison's book. And Allison, I'm telling you, what you should do with that is do a chapter or a verse or what have you, a paragraph or two a week, and then at the end of whatever period of time, actually put the book together. They all laughed at Sniglets, but...
I laughed. I did laugh at and with Sniglets. I have all the Sniglets.
Do you?
I do. Somewhere I have them. People might not know. They don't even know what A-Team is, and they might not know what Sniglets is. Sniglets was this comedian, Rich Hall. Sniglets was a term, I think, for those little hard things on the end of shoelaces, and it was all these terms for things that don't have... Like things that there should be a word for.
Yes.
Like behymen. Is a sniglet, if you
That's
will.
That's right. Thank you.
Sounds racist.
Mm-hmm.
Cheerio magnetism is the way that Cheerios stick together in a bowl.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah. Cheagle is Cheeto dust. Anyway. Well, I mean, I would hope to be like one of the greats like him.
We'll come up with some. Wow. We'll print some snicklets or we'll put some up. We'll read a few off as we go. We're going to be everywhere coming up in the next few months or so. So you can just go to adamcarolla.com and find out whether it's a stand-up show or a live podcast or a book signing, whatever, Phoenix and Pasadena and Irvine, San Francisco, New York, Richmond, Virginia, different shows, different places. But you find out if you want to go look on our website and find out when we're coming to a town near you. And also, you can go there and see where Brian's going to do his book signings as well.
I'll be on the Upper West Side tonight.
Oh, that's
in New
right.
York, doing a signing at the Barnes & Noble. So please come out and say hi. I'd love to see you.
And press the flesh with Bald Brian. Mm-hmm. All right. I want to do a little Baldywood. I want to tell you, last night, tuned in right about the middle, end of the third act on Youngblood, Swayze.
Oh, wow. Just as it's getting good.
And Rob Lowe.
Youngblood.
And you forget how fucking 80s were. Like, we talk about the 30s, and then you talk about the 50s being very 50s, you know? And the 30s were like, yeah, 22 Skidoo and all that shit. The 80s were fucking 80s and a half.
They were tubular.
Yeah, I mean, it was, first of all, every music was like this weird power, syntho, whatever. Every movie was like the same thing, where it's like, I tuned in right in when Swayze was in the hospital bed, and it's like, he cheap shotted me. Was it a hockey movie? Yeah, it's a hockey movie.
I never saw Youngblood.
Like, you got revenge for me, didn't you? And he, like Rob Lowe, you can see on his face, was a coward, you know? Then it's back to the barn, back to the farm, but training montage in barn. Yeah, all the montages took place. All the boxing training montages were done in the barn back then. And then there's that part where he got back with his super 80s girlfriend, and she's wearing like the sweatshirt with the collar cut out and one part hanging over
her arm. The Flashdance style.
And they're doing that move where they're yelling at each other, but there is like, I believed in you, but you don't believe in yourself anymore. There's only one person in this room that believes in you, and that's me. Don't walk away now. Don't walk away. It's like a lot of way over the top with the syntho crushing in the background. And then he gets with like the older brother back on the farm, and he's like, I was the one that was going places. Now I'm back here shoveling manure 14 hours a day. And you're feeling sorry for yourself because you're not in the NHL.
Feels very Rocky IV.
It was everything was just 80s on top of 80s with more 80s. The music, the cliche, the drag. Like, it's like they had a template for a movie, and that's all they would do. And I now wonder, what are we to look back upon 30 years from now and go, oh, it was so 2014.
At least recently, I don't know about 2014.
Looking at the camera and talking to it.
No, that's been happening forever. But the girls who try on the clothes and come out, and it's the, you know, the happy montage where the guy's going, no, thumbs down. They come out. They go, yeah, thumbs up. It's the dressing montage in and out of the dressing room, the changing room.
Yeah, but that's just it's been going on for a while. Mm. But yeah, that could even be.
That's why I meant not today, maybe.
I'm just saying, like, this was Youngblood was, I don't know, 1985 or 86 or whatever. And it was smack.
86.
Smack dab in the middle of the 80s, and as 80s could get. And by the way, when the bad dude always had a beard, the guy he had to fight, Rob Lowe had to fight at the end, had a beard. Now everyone's got a beard. I'm just saying, what are we going to look back? And I know it's real easy to go, oh, no, we got everything corrected.
Oh, no, we don't have anything corrected.
But they still do that every decade. You can still look back and go, oh, my God, that was so 90s. Oh, my God, that was so 70s. That was so
50s. I remember in the 90s wondering what could possibly be 90s about this. And then
right.
I mean, it's
Mom,
just
are
so
my
weird.
Stonewashed jeans out of the dryer yet? Yes.
Yeah.
I know. So we're going to look back on something.
I got something. Mm. And it's a small thing, but it's something that now, once I say it, you're going to notice it and it's going to drive you nuts. Guys, you can pull a picture of this. Every superhero movie especially, but even some others, have the superhero jumping or falling and landing in that three-point stance, you know what I mean, where they're like one leg's bent and they end up with a three-point stance. Iron Man does it. Superman does it. Every powerful man jumps off something's incredible height and lands on that majestic three-point stance.
Yeah, they used to
That is going to bug me all the time now.
Now it's going to bother
I'm
you.
I'm officially
Damn
haunted.
Damn you! Why did you have to point it out? You opened my eyes.
Now, there's certain things that you will, like, if you're smart, you can catch these and
yes!
Yes,
Iron Man.
There's certain things, like fashion, which was now everyone's men's dress shoes, it's all back to the pointy toe, which is cool, looks good, or pointy enough. There was a time in the mid-90s and later 90s when they had those big duck bill, big rounded off. And I remember one time very specifically, I was doing Politically Incorrect. And it was one of those moves where they'd call me that afternoon and go, "Hey, Mo, can you come in and fill in and blah, blah, blah." And I just, they knew I was on the short go-to list of the guy. I didn't need to be prepped that much. A guy lived in town. The guy, Bill Maher, liked me. And he told me I was like his favorite guest because he knew I would sit there and just put out. And as a host, that's all you want. You just want to be able to
sit. Somebody to worry about.
Yes, and someone that can kind of do your job, you know, like, you guys make an entertaining show for me and I'll sit here, you know, Chelsea Handler style. And I see. So he said, can you do – all right, now we got everyone showing up in the three-point stance. Brian's right.
Just, there's a, someone made a supercut of it, a minute-long supercut of the three-point stance and played it at Comic-Con. I just sent it to Gary. So if you guys want to see a minute of three-point stances, it happens. It happens. It's going to drive you nuts.
So I said, okay, I'll do the show. It was one more time. I can make the show. And I said, yeah, I'll do the show. Show is, I was living up in the Hollywood Hills. The show is over on CBS and in the middle of, I don't know, off of Melrose and whatever, Fairfax, whatever it is. And now we're watching the video. All right, it's going to drive me nuts. But yes, Brian, you're right. That is the.
Hundreds.
You're right.
Okay.
So, yeah, they used to just land on their feet because they knew what the fuck they were doing. Plus, when you jump off a 72-story building, you either have every bone in your body crushed and every organ pierced by that bone,
or you need that fist.
You land on your feet. It's like I always said. It's like lifting a diesel locomotive. You either can do it or you can't, but you don't strain.
As you're
pushing
finally
it over
got
your
it.
Head.
Finally made it.
Yeah, like you're doing a military press with 130 pounds. But it's a diesel locomotive. If you can, in fact, lift 700 tons above your head, I don't think you have to squat and push that hard or grimace. But either way, oh, look at the veins in his neck. He really must be pushing that diesel locomotive. But I said, fine.
The knees.
I shall do Politically Incorrect. And I had a brown suit. And I didn't have brown dress shoes. And I said, I'll buy some brown dress shoes on my way down because I'll be driving right through Melrose, and that's where all the trendy hip shoe shops and men's apparel and whatever. And so I left half hour early, and I was driving to stop it. And the stores are all backed up against each other. And I went in, and I just went, I just need some brown dress shoes. And they're like, here they are. And they all had that big fucking duck bill at the end. And I would say, you know what clown shoes look like? That's what clown shoes look like. They're get as far away from fucking bozo shoes as you can, but it wasn't. And I'd say, do you have any that kind of come a little bit pointed instead of
taper
bill out at the end? And they said, no, we they're all. This is what people want. This is the fashion. This is what people like. This is from Europe or whatever it is. And I said, these look like shit. And he'd say, I don't know what you're talking about because this is what everyone wants. And I said, we're going to make fun of these fucking shitty, stupid dress shoes that are all fucking duck-billed out. And they're like, no. And I ended up – I went to three fucking places, and I ended up just buying the stupid duck-billed brown shoes.
These like the square toes you're talking about? Are they squared off or are they more rounded?
They are both. There's the big wide – there's wide squared off at the front and then rounded.
Okay.
But either way, they're like wider at the front than they are – in the middle, and all the cool stuff is pointy. And it was always, I always understood that. And I don't mean super pointy. I just mean tapering in rather than bulging out. And now they're all just as I described it 15 years ago, and I knew it, and I could see it, but somebody decided that this horrible fucking fashion is where we're going. So I hope that you know, passion fruit iced tea and many of my other complaints will be corrected as we go. As we know, things like Click It and Ticket been replaced by you know, Fitzsteers, yeah. It Clears,
we'll
and things like that.
Yes. We'll look back and say that's so 2014.
Quentin Rampage Jackson is on the premises, so we'll get to him in just a second. Yesterday we were talking about some pictures from the set of my movie. we'll see. We have the one gal sitting up there with her feet on the sofa. I was complaining about feet on the cloth sofa. And the other one is now you really have to kind of you have to go through this one, but the foot, the boot up
planted on the couch.
Planted on the couch. The boot. Not the slipper, not the sock, the boot. Where you would sit. By the way, the pictures you gotta see them. And then there's the
it's like a motorcycle boot.
Yeah, it's a boot on just on the sofa pillow.
And by the way, that is a light gray sofa.
Yes.
Like,
and it's
will
cloth.
Show up.
And it's cloth.
Yes.
It's cloth. And now a picture of the dude at the craft service table holding the world's shaggiest dog, making himself a platter with one hand. He's hobbled by the fact that he has to hold this furry piece of shit over the top of the lox table. And by the way, the chick who puts the shit out doesn't say, hey, can you set your dog down? Look, I here's the deal. Everybody who's involved with this, when they see me next, or when they don't, just to their spouse, is going to go, Adam Carolla's a huge douchebag. He talked a bunch of shit about me on his podcast. But am I really the douchebag, or just the guy pointing it out, or possibly both? But
say both.
You're holding your fucking dog over a tray of lox that other people are going to eat. And it is not a...
No one wants hairy lox.
That is not only... That's a fucking... Dogs don't come much hairier than that dog.
No, that's an awfully hairy little terrier.
So what's up? Feet on the cloth sofas. What's up?
Are they method dog. Actors? Are they playing douchebags? Are they staying
no,
in character?
No, they both just work. They both work on the production.
Well, I don't know what to say.
They're not even,
Oh, they're not even actors.
They're work, then.
Oh.
Well, practically, not defending the guy with the dog, but... I'm sure that he was holding the dog because he thought it'd be rude to put the dog down in that crowd. Would you imagine? Like, or no?
He walked in. He walked around. People used to go to the fucking supermarket or the liquor store, and you'd walk in and you'd pass their dogs on a leash tied up in the front of the store. Remember that thing where you'd walk past the dog and you're like, hey,
Pooch. So rarely these days, yeah.
You don't see it anymore. They're walking in with the... I mean, maybe didn't want to set it. Why? Well, first off, why are you bringing your dog to work?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand.
That's number
when his
one.
Purpose
number
was
two,
there
if you do work there, good. Leave the dog. Bring your dog to work, and then leave it in your fucking office when you go out to make your lock. Whatever it is, what is it? What's up? You're just walking around carrying your dog. It's just shedding and dander. A fair number of people, Jimmy Kimmel included, are allergic to dogs. They just are. Why? Why wouldn't? One of the 57 people that are working here might possibly have some allergy to you and your dog. Like, what the fuck? And then the furniture, sofa, boots on the sofa thing, I don't even know what the fuck that comes from. It's just knock the fuck off, everybody. The whole environment, by the way, is filthy. It's not filthy, but what I mean is it's warehouse, it's indoor, outdoor, it's... crumb parking lot with bad asphalt and water and shit like that. It's not a nice, you know, you're not inside a hotel. There wouldn't be an excuse wherever you were, but there's shit on the bottom of your shoes. Why? On the cloth sofa. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, everyone thinks I'm a dick. I'm a huge dick. All right. Now, look, everyone, you all need to be deputized to tell everyone to fucking knock it off. I don't want to be the only ones doing it because that makes me the dickhead. You see what I'm saying? If you see a guy pull up to the fucking buffet table and he's holding his dog, tell him to set his dog down.
See, I think that the people – oh, this could come back to haunt me. People who work for you, but not me, should be deputized on the set to tell people to keep their feet off the stuff and their dogs away from the locks.
Yes.
Should this come up again?
Make me the dick.
That was Adam breaking down Youngblood. I actually watched Adam. Actually, sorry. And that was Adam back in 2014 breaking down Youngblood. I actually watched Youngblood with Adam when we were in Europe. One of the cameramen was Canadian and loved this movie and thought, insisted we watched it. So we put it on. I hated it. I didn't hate it. I just thought it was, not really my cup of tea. So Adam decides to then put the movie Red Dawn on for a palate cleanser, to which I fell asleep to. He was not happy about that one either.
Oh, man. The Red Dawn, he did a full commentary for Basic Cable Commentaries. He has not done one for Youngblood. He probably won't.
Yeah, I don't think he would either. But before we get going with the next clip, I want to remind everybody about LifeLock. Even basic information, names, email addresses, phone numbers, they all have value on the black market, and they're cyber criminals who use it to gain access to more sensitive information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet, and you could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit. But good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has been compromised, they send you an alert. So, if you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help restore your identity easier than you could on your own. Check it out. It's LifeLock, right, Gio?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions in all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plans right for you and save the 25% off your first year promo code Adam. That's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
All right, we have another clip for everybody. We're going to keep it in 2014, but just jump a few months ahead to the end of July, where Adam is hanging out with David Wilde.
Yeah, and, you know, there's few people who can pinpoint the worst days of their life, and there's probably several of them. What's great about the Adam Carolla Show is I can pinpoint several of yours. And this was the day with Paul Rodriguez Jr., Josh Landon, David Wilde, Alison Rose, and Brian Bishop. I believe some beer was dropped off this day or the next and started a chain of events that was not very pleasant that we played before on the show. And this portion, none of that happens. It's just David Wilde and just some classic riffing with the gang at the time and making fun of David. Love it. Check it out.
Now, I'm just saying, if I listen to a Robert Cray song, I say, well, I can't do that.
No.
And when I listen to early Beastie Boys, I go, well, if I got drunk, I could try that. That's all. I just say it's what I'd do if I didn't have any talent.
What's the ultimate can't do that but wouldn't want to? Not necessarily even music. I'm just trying to think of some, like, amazings.
Can't do it, but wouldn't want
to.
Explain,
like,
that.
Blow ping pong balls out of your pussy.
Being a good fluffer.
Can't do it, and wouldn't necessarily want to.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I'm trying to think of just the ultimate, like, skill that you look at and you're impressed with the skill, but it's not that impressive. It's sort of like your rodeo clown argument.
Yeah, I feel rodeo clown. There's a lot of magic that's that way. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of acrobatic sort of. Semi-homoerotic two brothers feats of strength wearing super tight dance skins with the shirt off doing things where the one guy's lowering his face down to the other guy's face and then pushing him up while the other guy's doing a handstand over him.
It's a modern dance, perhaps.
In music, to me, it's prog rock. And it's usually these guitar players who wank and shred, and I don't give a shit because they don't play a song. I like songs.
Yes.
So that's in musical terms because it seems masturbatory. And I don't put down masturbation
well,
in any other way.
David
but Wilde
at least.
Speaking of songs, Dave is going to go see Boston and Cheap Trick.
Tonight, not 1978. I'm going tonight.
Right. And I'll tell you, everyone knows Boston, but did you get the Boston song? That here's a Boston song that doesn't get as many spins, but one of my favorite Boston songs. Maybe my favorite Boston song.
This little part always sounds like the Stones. Give me shelter. Building.
Turn it up a little, Brian. You're going to hear this tonight, but this is a very signature sound for me in Boston. Oh, you better hope they do this shit tonight.
Don't think I haven't gone to setlist.com to look at what's going to be played.
Oh, yeah.
You can do that now.
I didn't even know that exists.
Oh, yeah, you gotta go. You can sort of get some.
We should have that for a podcast.
So good. I have a Corolla Boston song that I think you have to go.
Now, hold on. I'm not done rocking.
No.
Turn it up. Top five Boston songs?
Oh, no. I've written, I did the liner notes. They reissued the record a couple of years ago, and I talked to, that love this song. It's one of my favorite songs. But, no, there's one, I'm moved by how upbeat it is for you to pick it.
Love this song.
I think of a, I'll think of another one of Boston that I think of more as your life story.
Well, there is one, there is a Boston song that is my life story.
Really?
I mean, like literally. Yeah, I was listening to like Uncle Joe Benson hosting Rockline.
Right.
And I was in my garage, and it's in the book somewhere, and it was like Sunday night. That show used to come on Sunday night. And Sunday night was always that day. You know, here's how you know your life is shitty. Sunday night's gut check time. Like, Sunday night is...
Here we go again.
Here we go. Yeah, now, when I went to school, Sunday night was, here we go. Another shitty school week with some stink eyes from some teachers and some subpar performances by the ace man in the classroom. Like, the guy with the 1.7 GPA is heading back for round number two.
Getting back in the batter's box.
I was a horrible student, so Sunday night was like kittens in the stomach. And then that turned into Sunday night is Monday morning is picking up garbage on a construction site with right. The guy strung out on pain meds screaming at me. And I'm like, I used to sit around Sunday nights just going, God, do I hate my life. By the way, the two ways, Gary, I need to know Rise, where it charted. Thank you. The two ways you'll know about how your life is going, one is when the phone rings, what do? I've always said, do you hesitate? Do you think, should I pick that up? If it says blocked or private caller, do you just grab it? Or do you stand and stare at it and think, who is this? What do they want? Who could it? You go through a quick
That's
Rolodex.
That's a super healthy one, right?
Yes, it is, sweetie.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. It is.
I'm doing well.
Yes, it is.
You.
I know. The adults are going to. No. So. If you dive for the phone, that's bad. That means you're lonely and fucking hard up. If you're standing at it, staring at it, going, is that my mom? If that's my mom, I don't want to pick it up. Like, if you're doing that, unhealthy. Healthiest is the phone is ringing. I will pick it up in whatever time it takes a person to walk over.
So you're defining healthy as whatever the fuck you do is.
No, I'm saying there have been many times in my life where that phone has rang and I've went, who's that? Or I've dove on it.
Right.
Not the best is just the phone is ringing. I have zero running through my head other than the phone's ringing. I shall pick it up.
You want to be the Eric Stoltz character in Pulp Fiction, sitting there eating the,
right.
Eating the cereal in your bathroom. The phone's ringing. You're like, I'll get to it.
Same with Sunday night. Sunday night should come around, and you shouldn't have strong feelings.
That dread.
At 10 o'clock on Sunday night, when you're kind of wrapping it up, going, I got to get to bed. You shouldn't have that, here we go again. No feelings on a Sunday night. No thoughts when the phone rings. That is a happy, healthy, balanced. I'm not saying rich. I'm not saying lives in a mansion. I'm just saying there's a content person, self-actualized.
I haven't had the Sunday. Yeah, I remember having the Sunday night feeling my entire school career and never since, which is good. I think because I like what I do. I think
that means you started out of school doing what you wanted to do.
I think of the Boston song that I think of with you is a great song that's never played on the radio from the second record, Don't Look Back, called Used to Bad News. If Brian can find that, a great song. But it's someone who's been through, you know, rough times. And this is a beautiful song. I'll tell you my Tom Schultz story, who's the leader guitar god of Boston.
Oh, hold on one second. Sorry, I sat around listening to Rockline and Uncle Joe, and he was talking to Tom Schultz, and he said, I had a good gig at IBM, or wherever he was working.
Yeah, he was at Kodak, I think. It was.
Kodak.
Yeah.
And he said, this song was just about going, you know what? I got to have peace of mind. I got to do what I want. everyone's living in competition. I got to step out of this, and I got to follow my dream. I got to do music. And I was just sitting in my garage on Sunday night going, fuck that. I'm doing comedy. And it scant. 8.5 years later, I made my first $50.
So this song's to blame? I mean, this song's to credit?
Yeah. Well, Rise, by the way, he says, take a look ahead. He's telling Uncle Joe Benson, he said, want to look ahead and go, what do you want to do?
8 years ahead for, that's right. In your case.
30 on the U.S. dance charts, by the way, Rise.
I think that's a local thing. I never heard that song before in my life.
And, well, made it to 30 on the U.S. dance charts, whatever that means. And 11 on the U.K. charts. Does everyone else know that song? Rise?
No, they don't look like there's much reaction.
I've heard it.
You've heard it. Okay. That means yes.
So, okay. If you play Used to Bad News, I'll just tell you this quick story, which is not that quick. But So, I got a call from the label, Columbia Records. I don't know if you know much about Tom Scholz, but he fought his label. Like, Boston became a pirate ship because he hated his record company. They forced him to put a record out quickly, and he's a total perfectionist / possibly control freak.
Yes, I know this song.
And but Tom Scholz, so about 7 years ago, I got a call from the label saying, would you like to write new liner notes paying tribute to the first Boston record and then Don't Look Back, the second one? I said, I'd love to. I love those records. I wrote the essay, I started writing the essay, sent it to the label, and then I guess Tom Scholz read that they were doing this, had his lawyers basically sue to get all the materials, like what the tapes of this with the reissue and all the materials. He hated the mix. He hated everything they were doing. And his lawyer said, we hate everything, but we love this essay. It actually is honest and true. So that day, I happened to be at the Aspen Comedy Festival, and I was hosting. Vince Vaughn had asked me to do the reunion of Swingers, which was Favreau, Vince Vaughn, and Doug Liman, the director of that movie, for the 10th anniversary or whatever it was of Swingers. So I had a bad cell connection, and he said, he called me to thank me for the notes and then say, you want to do an interview, so I'll add some quotes into the liner notes.
Scholz did.
Tom Scholz. Unfortunately, the cell phone connection in Aspen with those mountains was bad. And I said, at a certain point, I said, I have to go. I'm hosting this reunion of Swingers. And I think I said Vince Vaughn or whatever.
You could have said Swingers Party.
But at the next day, Monday, when I got back, I got a call. The label said, Tom really liked talking to you, but he was a little freaked out by your lifestyle choice. And I went, what the fuck does that mean? He goes, he said that you told him you were at some sort of Swingers event. And I was like, I wish my life were that
again,
good.
As a trollic American, that is an offense. You have a cultural right. To perform and engage in this, like the American Indians in the peyote ritual.
It's like head rights.
That's right. Your sexuality's grandfathered in. I want to give a little love to one of our sponsors, and then we'll play a couple of quick songs. We should one of these days put a list together of guys that are temperamental douchebags versus guys that just know what they want, and they're sort of like perfectionists. And I know what it's like to have shit tampered with constantly and to get really super annoyed by it and to have, like, you know, have the guy go, just read what's on the teleprompter, and me going, that joke doesn't make sense. Why don't you let me fix it up? And them getting headstrong about it and then me coming across as a douchebag. But the douchebags, and there's maybe a little commingling here, but the douchebags versus the guys who are just strong artists, knew what they wanted, and turned out to be right.
I think people are way too free in the social media age wrongly calling people douchebags. Like yesterday, there was this whole thing where Freddie Prinze Jr. said that basically at Comic-Con, I guess, he said that Kiefer Sutherland was an asshole, like, and the biggest douchebag he's ever dealt with. And I guess when they were shooting 24, and I got to tell you, I tweeted something just because I've worked with Kiefer like 14 times, and he's literally the greatest gentleman, like a complete lovely guy. I'm sure when he's been drunk a few times, he's gotten in trouble, but I've never seen anything but I think we've all gotten too free, like throwing that around.
Right.
If you're talking about Tom Scholz, the guy from Boston, he seemed like the greatest guy. I think, though, what happens is if you, like, the way society will picture someone like him, they'll say he's this control freak who's, you know, but the truth is, what happened is he got called like a corporate rock, you know, sort of sellout kind of guy. He was always known, like the critics didn't like Boston.
Right.
But I think the music was incredibly important to him. And so what happened was record companies back in those days would sign you to a record deal where you had to make like 2 records a year. And he was a guy who said, no, I want to do quality and I'm not going to put – and that was his whole career. So he was fighting labels his whole career not to put out records until he felt they were good.
Well, you have a song. We have somebody – speaking of music, we'll cue up your song. This was going to be a nice tribute to our wives, but then Tony 38 – Tony?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Georgia. Oh, you. Tony.
Yeah, I'm actually wandering back toward the phone charger in case we need to have a longer conversation than
this could go on a while.
Okay, well let me try and go to my car where I have a charger.
Right.
If not, I'll go to my record store and have a charger I know works.
What are you driving, Tony? You say car, do you mean truck or do you mean car?
2009 Nissan Sentra that I still have about $4,000 to pay off.
It's a sweet ride. That's a four banger with some cloth interior.
It's got the cruise control and the volume control for the radio on the steering wheel.
Mm.
So, in lieu of suicide jobs being illegal, I lash the steering wheel to my hand with a bandana if I need to drive with one hand, so to speak.
You say suicide knob. You mean Brody Knob?
Yes. Okay, well, you referred to it as Suicide Knob at one point, so because that's a funnier name, I'm going to use that.
Okay, I called it a Brody Knob and
we'll
a Suicide
Brody,
Knob.
We'll say Brody Knob because of...
That's
you know,
the knob that, that goes on the steering wheel of the Zamboni.
Mm-hmm. You just turn it like a big bus.
Yeah, it's like putting a smaller knob on a bigger knob, which is a steering wheel, if you think about it.
Yeah, but I lashed my hand to the steering wheel a bit with a bandana to not get DUIs. So, you know, it happened.
Go. Good for you, Chachi. Little bandana reference.
Thanks,
there.
Journey.
Yeah. Hold on. What was Chachi? You know, we're going to write down one of these. You know, we try to come up with our catchphrases that never caught on, like Lord have mercy or have mercy or whatever.
Oh, right. John Stamos's.
Yeah. Chachi's bandana tied around his thigh like a tourniquet in the later years of Happy Days. These are stylistic things that never caught on.
Only
right?
One person decided to run with that, and that was Punky Brewster.
Oh, yeah.
But just one.
Yes, Tony? Sir.
Wait, does attaching your hand to the steering wheel prevent a DUI?
Tony?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, good.
So your question is about Born in the USA?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to why Lynette flies all over the country to hang out with Bruce, but at least publicly you kind of hate Bruce, but I think either A, you're just being discreet, or B, you have issues with Born in the USA, A, being the template for...
Can I just say that Adam has never said he hated Bruce. You've always said he's not as good as John Hyatt.
It's a shitty song, like number one. I think Bruce would admit it's a shitty song. I hope he would admit it's a shitty song. I mean, it's just a bad song. But here's my thing about Bruce. I give him an A+ as a performer. I don't think he's a real smart dude. I think he has a gift for music, but I don't think he's a sharp dude. And I think he gets a ton of mileage out of sitting around and talking about people that are out of work and hardworking Americans and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's just sort of something he hides behind because he doesn't have anything intelligent to say. And his songs are pretty, you know, your daddy doesn't like me, so you snuck out, jumped on the back of my motorcycle, and we went out to the edge of town and that kind of stuff. Like, he has some great songs. Do not get me wrong. But I've never listen to Bruce songs, and I've been forced to listen to a lot of them, and went, ooh, that was a great turn of phrase there. It is really smart, interesting, funny. Some guys write songs. Like,
I'm from New Jersey. I have to leave the room.
All right. Ben Folds. Writes songs that make you laugh and smile and cry, and like you're going, oh, that's a funny fucking lyric. Like, that's so witty. That's so intelligent. That's so smart. Bruce just crafts great songs. Rosalita, great song. But going out by the edge of town and stuff, it's just kind of...
Well, I think one thing maybe you're saying, which I do agree with... by the way, Born in the USA is my least favorite Bruce record, and I do love Bruce, and I grew up in New Jersey, and I worship him. But I think that's his most earnest. I think when he's at his most earnest, like Rosalita is loose and fun, and he's great at that. Sometimes when he gets earnest, it gets very...
Something can be too anthemic.
Yeah.
You too has that same problem.
I think he's not... I don't think he has a high enough intelligence to be earnest and pull it off. There's some guys who can do it, and when they do it... there are guys like Robert Downey Jr. Those guys are like geniuses. Not at songwriting, but just... They're just super bright guys. And when Robert Downey Jr. tries to say something interesting comes out of his mouth. Bruce...
I love him.
You should. When Bruce does it, it's just factories closing down. And I grew up with my dad. Blah, blah, blah.
Mike Rowe is the super clever Bruce.
Yes, I just think he's over. We attribute. Here's the whole thing. As I've said before, it's like Robert De Niro is a great actor, just like Terrell Owens is a great athlete. But we don't have to attach a whole bunch of extra attributes to him. T.O. is probably a douchebag. Who's an amazing, phenomenal, who was a phenomenal athlete. Okay, fine. Well, we can compartmentalize in sports, you know? Mm-hmm. When it comes to the artists, like Bruce, he's a genius. I think he's an idiot savant musician who busts his ass. But I don't find him...
I know someone who you sleep with who would disagree.
Well, that's all going to end.
That could be a long list.
After this. Yeah. Anyway, Tony... Listen,
yes,
I've gotten into drunken arguments with people about it all the time. I just think John Hyatt's a better songwriter than he is. I think it's lyrically. Just writes better, smarter, more interesting songs.
Well, if we're going to talk Bruce and we're going to talk Born in the USA, my real question to you, maybe off the record, is I was on a date with a lady that's not the girl I want to marry, but I heard I'm on Fire.
Yeah, that makes two of you.
While a broken parking lot carnival ride ran with nobody on it, and I thought that was beautiful. Exactly. There you go. So
this is another
not
much of anything song to me.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
it's what you do if you wanted to write a song that sounded like it meant something, but it doesn't mean anything.
He's trying to ask his off-the-record question.
Oh, sorry.
Mr. David Wilde, are you hearing me?
Yes, I am, sir.
So let me ask you to pose this question to Adam, or we'll both pose it.
Adam,
okay.
Do you have an issue with, Lynette being scared of you wanting to fuck girls on the road because of I'm on Fire? Or do you really like I'm on Fire?
We were discussing that off the air.
You have to make movies and do podcasts and stuff, and you don't have time to go hang out with Bruce.
Yeah.
I guess that's my real question. Okay, good.
All right. Somebody's got to pay for the plane tickets to hang out with Bruce. That's why I hang out with Mike August at a Motel 6. And... do shows.
But that's, speaking of our wives, that's nice.
Yes. No, look, the Bruce brings Lynette an incredible amount of joy and...
something no other man could bring her.
That's right. And she's thrilled. Look, Nils Lofgren called the other day, or his wife called the other day, and... she was going to do a podcast with him, and she was over the fucking moon about it. And, you know, so it's like, E Street Fantasy Camp for her. It's fine, but I got to run the camp.
It's the worst cover band ever.
I'm cleaning the toilets.
I understand from your point of view, because I went with Phil and, a bunch of, adults, way adults, who shouldn't be geeks, and we're all still Bruce geeks. So Bruce fans tend to be like deadheads. They are a little they love it all.
Yeah, they're like, if deadheads drove a BMW 7 Series, that would be them. And listen, I'll see the guy in concert anytime he's in town. I just don't have time to get on a plane. But yes.
You know, I'm interested to hear what David Wilde thinks, but he might be a better songwriter lyrically than Bruce Springsteen. But Bruce's songs obviously connect with people on a... they make the more connections.
Bruce Springsteen and John Lando's manager... and I think Landau encouraged this. Bruce took on the mantle. He's a guy who's looked at Bob Dylan, looked at John Fogerty, put this together, and he has this desire to be to take it to that stadium level, which you have to be a certain kind of individual to yes. want that. It's a crazy thing to want to do. And I'll tell you, I saw it very close hand when
Gabriel Iglesias walk in here.
No, but when we did the London Calling with on the Flash. Grammys, which was we did a tribute when Joe Strummer died on the Grammys, and we had Bruce, Elvis Costello, who you do love, like I love,
sure,
and we had Dave Grohl do this number, and I watched in rehearsal where Elvis, it was, and I had helped put it together with Elvis being in it and all that, and Elvis dominated this number, and he was on fire. And I remember thinking, God, this is going to be a huge moment for Elvis because he just ruled it. And Bruce sat back. Mm-hmm. But when the cameras went on the show, Bruce owned it. He stepped – and I thought, that's why Bruce Springsteen is Bruce Springsteen. There's certain artists who take the moment, who squeeze it for every bit. And it's like a boxer who's, shows up for those big fights.
Big game. And doing 3-hour incredible live shows and all that. Yeah, I agree with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
No
now,
argument.
Songs. And by the way, if I had my choice of just sitting around and listening to random artists, I would go with Bruce over whatever random bullshit was going to pop up. Do not get me wrong. It's just I happen to live in a house where he's worshipped. All right. You have a song?
Yeah, my 20th anniversary is Thursday, and mm-hmm. tomorrow I'm going to go celebrate it. So I thought we should each do a song, because I'm in love with two women. There's two women in my life, your wife and my wife. And mm-hmm. I retweeted a picture of your wife that she tweeted the other day, and I was like, she's one of the most stunning women in the world. So I hope you picked a beautiful – but she's an amazing – I mean, beyond being a beautiful person, she's a beautiful woman. But my wife,
easy, David Wilde.
My beautiful wife, it's what I want.
He's
wanted to
swimmer.
Say.
He already explained.
I'm trying to get onto that her Bruce podcast desperately. but in any case, my song for my wife, because I was thinking, I tweeted you this morning that we should at Wild About Music that mm-hmm. we should pick a song for our wives, because I was thinking about an anniversary gift that would be cheap, and this song is as cheap a gift as I can give her.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have one in mind, and then I realized the moment that I think about now, when we've gotten to this point, is when our first son, who's been in here a million times, was born. A month before he was born, we went to the doctor, Howie Mandel, not the comedian, but the gynecologist, and mm-hmm. Some result came in. He goes, "You have to go to Cedars-Sinai now. There's something odd," mm-hmm. which is not something you want to hear,
right?
And we had to go, and he sent us to this doctor. And you walk in, and you find out it's a cancer doctor. It's the mm-hmm. best cancer doctor in the world, but even the best cancer doctor in the world, you don't want to go to when you're about to have a
sure.
baby. And we ended up spending the whole day because there was some blood result that was just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent the whole day watching when you sit in the waiting room at Cedars-Sinai at one of those cancer geniuses, there's a million people who were not doing well in that room.
Sure.
It's not the room you want to sit in when you're having a kid. And we waited the whole day to see the doctor. And when we got in, after like 5 minutes, he goes, "It's nothing." He said, "It's an idiopathic, just some result, but you don't have anything." And she
right.
didn't. But that night was...
He couldn't come out and tell you that at the beginning of the day?
No, well, he didn't see us. We had to wait for him.
But still.
Oh, it was horrible. But I remember then we went... That was the day that Fleetwood Mac did their reunion, which is called The Dance, that when they had their all reunion. And the first song they played, I believe, was this song called The Chain. And I, thinking about it today, I remembered the song began, and I started crying hysterically because of the emotional... you know, up and down of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the people next to me were like, "Boy, he loves Fleetwood Mac." And the truth is, I always, that's what when I think of, you know, making it 20 years with someone. That's the moment that, and it was, and the song is called The Chain, which is one vision of marriage. It's the chain that keeps you together. But
it's a ball so that's what, oh, yeah.
That was my song, yeah. My ball is her chain.
Now, this is the live version, right?
This is actually the version I heard that day. It was on the Warner Brothers lot. They came out. They hadn't played in years.
Oh, right.
And this
yeah.
is their comeback tour. And we didn't want to miss it, but I just was in no emotional... It was actually one of the worst and best days of my entire life. At the end of the day, I was like, this is great, you know. You're not going to die and we're hearing Fleetwood Mac. That's good.
I hate this song. But when you hear Fleetwood Mac live, you go, This is musicianship.
Oh, I think they're a great band. They're touring now with Christy McVie returned, and they're heading out on tour. I recommend them seeing them live always. Because, again, it comes down to musicianship. Like I said, they have that weird, the rhythm section of Mick Fleetwood and John McVie. They just have a groove that's their own.
I feel the same way about them as almost as I feel about the Eagles, which is I hate a lot of their songs, but they're great musicians, and they're great live.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't throw the musician out with the bathwater. Just because there's a bunch of Eagles songs I hate doesn't mean they don't get up on stage and bring it. Like, well, they can play their instruments.
Two equal bands, whether I like them or not. I think I'm going to take the one where men and women are singing at the same time.
I think that's such a cool point. I actually wrote the liner notes. They reissued Rumors, the 25th anniversary of Big Edition this year, and I wrote the liner notes, and I said I was going to do this thing of trying to listen to it like I'd never heard it before and write the liner notes and interview all the band members. And I realized that's one of the biggest things in rock history. There's not enough groups with men and women having a conversation. It's like this band is that's what Rumors was. It was a conversation between men and women who had all had sex with each other.
Ooh, that's what you're into.
Mm. Yeah, that is part of my
Mamas and the Papas ran into a little of that too.
Yeah, but they did it too multi-generationally, ultimately.
Ultimately, at some point you have to stop.
Otherwise,
it becomes borders on biblical.
Yeah, exactly.
If you like Fleetwood Mac, there's the documentary Sound City, the David Grohl documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
Has a lot of Fleetwood Mac history in it.
That's Stevie,
They recorded Buckingham Nicks and then Fleetwood Mac. There's a lot of early stuff.
I love that movie. It's great.
I want to be a hypocrite here. I hate many Fleetwood Mac songs, but I completely appreciate them performing. And I would probably go to watch them perform because they're great performers.
Yeah. And now I'd like to
and
do
musicians.
My song. And now I'd like to do my song for your wife. No. You what song do you have for your wife?
Ah, I hope you're sitting down. Picked one of my favorite love songs from John Hiatt, and the reason I love this song is because it's completely stripped down. It doesn't have anything but him and his acoustic guitar. And also it has a little piece of trivia in it. You can turn it up a little if you could. Which you'll recognize this line from a Hootie and the Blowfish album.
I'm 34 years old now.
It'll come in a moment.
And I've come to you.
David Wilde will know the historical reference with the Hootie and the Blowfish thing.
Does the word cracked in it?
Yes.
Yes, I do remember.
But the thing I like about it is he's not saying how much I love you, baby. He's saying, here's how to learn how to do it.
I didn't know it would be
Dawson,
so
either you got to turn me up or Brian, you got to turn me up because I'm
learning how to
thank you.
Love.
Here comes the Hootie reference. But I also think this is why he's a great songwriter when he talks about he encapsulates his shitty life in like three words.
There was a life that I was living in some cracked rear view.
There it is.
That's why he's good.
Where no future was given.
But I just like the perspective, and I feel this way with Lynette. And I think a lot of guys would probably feel this way, too, that we're the guys who have to learn how to do this. Women, we show up equipped to make money, to argue, to drink, to follow sports teams, to love USC, to tailgate, to do all the fun
things.
For
example.
But the learning part, how to be, you know, when it comes to a relationship, we're the ones that need to learn. We need to do the most changing.
Right. Well, and especially as time goes on, you know, I think what's weird is there's that 5 years where you're sort of caught up in, I think before kids and after kids, that changes. Like,
sure. All right, let's hear it.
I might have never realized the courage in your kiss.
Singing
that. Sweet forgiveness.
I don't know. Try to find out.
Who's singing? What's that?
Backups.
This is. Isn't this the Nick Lowe is playing bass? And. Because this was. Was this Bring the Family or the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bring the Family is. Nick Lowe's on bass and might be doing the backing vocal. I'm not sure. Ry Cooder is playing. John Chalou is producing, I believe.
We'll figure it out. And it has a great ending, too. To know how you ever saw it through. 'Cause I only got to where I am right now. Learning how to love. Learning how to love you. Learning how to love you.
If we could only get Bruce Springsteen to cover it for Lynette, it would be her favorite song of all time.
Right. Never heard it on the radio, but we will. We do know all the words to People Are People and Rise. And by the way, this song probably came out about the same time
as Rise.
And maybe People Are People, or maybe just a couple of years after. Just love a stripped
That's
down,
a
basic,
great Joyce
beautiful
and
song.
You, if you ever want, you know, if you want to know, you hear talking about John Hyatt all the time. Start with Bring the Family. It's one of the best records ever made.
I concur, but you're preaching to the choir. All right, we'll find out. I don't know who was singing harmony on that song. You look. I'll talk about
I think that's basically Little Village before Little Village. That's how Little Village happened. So I think it's – I'm pretty sure – you can check me, but I'm pretty sure it would be Ry Cooder, Nick Lowe, produced by John Chalou. I could be wrong.
But you could be right. You could be black. You could be white. You could be right. You could be wrong. You could be black. You could be white.
Back to the drawing board of that one.
Jesus Christ.
No, but I heard it a different way the second time.
Is there not one human being in these people's sphere that goes, what are you doing? That's fucking horrible. Listen, I shared an office with Jimmy Kimmel. All I would do is pitch ideas for the man show, and at least two-thirds of them he'd go, well, that sucked. You got anything better than that?
Listen, let's be encouraged.
If you want that kind of feedback.
I do, because I'd like to make a good product.
Think of Depeche Mode. They started out, People Are. That was a good beginning. They could have gone, People Are Strange. The Doors then, People Are Strange. They made the mistake by repeating very quickly, People Are People. It's like, yeah, I sort of assume that people are people.
Yes.
That was David Wilde back in 2014.
Sorry to bring up those troubling memories for you, Chris.
It's okay. I don't even know what you're talking about. I have a rest from my mind.
Before you don't even drink beer.
I love beer. Oh, wait. No, I hate beer. That's right. Yeah, I see what you're doing. Before you go to the next clip, I want to remind everybody about Tommy John. Look, we always say push yourself, but seek discomfort. Just not in your pants. Get real comfortable in Tommy John. Start every morning in Tommy John underwear. When you're that much more comfortable, you can do everything better. And they don't just have customers. They have converts, just like Gio.
Absolutely. And I just saw something. Adam Carolla on Instagram posted a picture of Tommy John. And apparently they have a lounge pants that kind of resembles like a striped track pant, which I do not possess, and I now have to order. I love their second skin. I love their cool cotton. I love their everyday lounge pants for the house. But whatever Adam was holding, I want those.
Yeah. They're so breathable, lightweight. They have moisture-wicking fabric and four times the stretch of competing brands. So check it out. And also they make a lot of stuff for the ladies too. Best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guarantee it's Tommy John. And get that much more comfortable at TommyJohn.com/classics and save 15% on your first order. That's right. Save 15% right now at TommyJohn.com/classics. TommyJohn.com/classics.
Awesome.
Now, let's get going. It's so awesome. Let's get going with the next clip. This one features the late, great Grant Imahara.
Yeah, for all the Mythbusters fans who watched the show for, what was it, 12, 14 seasons? I think Grant was on for the majority of them, along with the secondary team with Tori and Kari. Kari was on the old Adam Carolla morning show back in the day, got Express the Anus, for people who have heard that clip. It's pretty infamous what Bald Brian did with some quick drop work on that episode. Grant had never been on before. Sadly, he passed away recently. It's tragedy. Everybody's really bummed out about it. And we didn't really play this episode on the show or talk about it in classics. I'm like, we should really do that. This is Adam Carolla Show 1979. This is from back in January of 2017. It's Grant. James Mitchell's in this interview, but he's not in this portion. It's Grant, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop, along with Adam. And a little bit of the show opening, mocking the former Dos Equis guy, who I believe Chris remembers very well. Check it out.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Naples, Florida. A 45-year-old woman held a lighter to a propane tank in front of deputies before being taken into custody. The woman resisted arrest and bit the hand of one deputy, but failed to cause injury because she had no teeth. Definitely not a Jew.
Grant Imahara. Did I screw that up or I got that right?
You got it right. Thank you.
In studio, the show White Rabbit Project, streaming now on Netflix. What a time we're living in. So much great content out there. Such an exciting show. Formerly of Mythbusters, after 10 years, Grant's getting out, doing his own thing. A engineering degree from USC, man. Must have been excited about that Rose Bowl yesterday.
I'm really not a football guy, so I didn't watch it.
Oh,
I was in the shop.
But you have a good reason.
I was in the shop. I was cleaning my shop, actually, which I try and do in the off season.
Now, I know
your porcelain doll shop or like
my machine shop.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Done a lot of, started off industrial light and magic, done a lot of visual effects, done the Craig Ferguson robot and that kind of stuff. What are you working on when you're in your shop normally?
Well, I've got a number of projects. I try and keep making things when we're not filming, and that way I keep the skills sharp. So right now, it's all projects for friends. 3D printing a Pip-Boy from Fallout. It's a video game. It's like a thing you wear on your wrist.
Where are we at with 3D printing? I know it's coming a long way. I know they're doing metallic stuff now, and there's a lot of really cool stuff. You know, 8 years ago, you'd go to Leno's garage, and he would show you a crescent wrench or an adjustable wrench that was done out of PVC material, and it was like the coolest thing in the world. It like actually worked, but it's a plastic wrench.
Yeah,
not a lot of good. But now that they're doing a lot of it out of alloys and stuff,
yeah, but it's not something that's available to everyone. It's a sort of thing that you order from a company online. It's your design, and you send them your design, and then they send you back the metal part. Currently,
not
consumer grade. Oh, it's not as fun, but it's great to have something that you have designed come to you in a box. Perfect.
Right, because when you're doing – this stuff is bespoke. I mean, you're doing this robot or whatever it is. You need parts and shapes and things. All the race cars I have in the other shop, I have guys over there with stamps and presses and bends and torches and stuff, and they're making the stuff. There's nothing off a shelf you could get for any of those cars.
Yeah.
You design it on your computer, and is it a CAD?
It's in CAD. It's in a 3D file.
And you just send it to this company, and X amount of days or weeks later, and you specify the alloy?
I don't think that you can get that specific, but because the process is slightly different, I believe it's sintered, so a powder that then is fused into the metal form.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really spec out a specific alloy. If it's something that is so technical that it needs a certain strength or a certain grade alloy, still CNC is the best process for a custom part.
You know what I feel like? I feel like, I don't know why, but, you know, it's like, I feel like you're Jean-Claude Van Damme, but you...
Stop there.
But but we keep saying to you, you got to get in the UFC, you got to go in the octagon. We got to see. I feel that, for that, with you, it's BattleBots.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well...
I feel like a lot of talk about making funny robots.
It's your calling.
Let's get some BattleBot going.
It was my calling, in fact. In 1999, the first incarnation of BattleBots was on Comedy Central.
I know.
And I had a BattleBot in there called Deadblow. That
I don't know gay slang, so slow down.
And it came in second.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it came in second place in its weight class and won two Rumbles.
They used to have weight.
Wow. Oh, I remember that one.
Wow.
Is it more of a?
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's so it has a hammer. That
it has a hammer. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And a pointed tip on the hammer, and it was a pneumatic hammer, so it was really quick.
I tell you, that show is so fun to watch with me and my son because it's perfect for it's a perfect sort of father sonny show to watch because he's into the action, I'm into the mechanical. This is back when they used to have it at the armory or wherever it was on the island outside.
Yeah, that was they had it at Fort Mason. They switched it around to a few places, but Fort Mason was one of them.
It was Fort, yeah, and there you were. And so now
it's
you're
been a
doing
long time
now. That's
since
back
I've seen
when
this.
They had weight classes.
That's right.
They don't have them anymore. You must have done battle with Ziggo at some point, maybe Ziggo, Son of Waiachi.
Ziggo was a lightweight, and Son of Waiachi was a heavyweight. So I faced Hazard, which was a middleweight spinner.
Oh, spinners are rough. Yeah. Again, I don't know gay slang, but I do know battle bots. you didn't want to mess with Ziggo. Ziggo was one of my all-time favorites.
What was the one that was like a Roomba but just whirled incessantly?
Ziggo.
Was that the one?
Because
that was impossible to destroy.
Ziggo, Son of Waiachi, and then Vlad the Impaler.
Vlad was great.
Vlad was heavy, simple. It's just 300 pounds with a big old rod in front of it. And that was it. It just grew
it was
everybody
like a little
up.
Forklift that would just pop them up and push them all over the arena.
So you placed.
I did, yeah.
That's awesome.
Back in the day.
What was the weight? So we were like the middleweight.
120.
120 pounds.
Yeah.
And what did you... So obviously, bang for your buck, you wouldn't want to use as much aluminum as you could.
Yeah. 60-61 was most of it. 20-24 for parts that mattered. The arm, after the first year where they sliced it as a part of the combat, part of it flew off. I switched that to titanium, which I had to have water jet cut.
Wow. And did...
You're that nerd.
the number I am. Saying
I'm the definition.
Proudly.
You look in the dictionary, there's a picture of me.
In terms of making a living doing anything related to BattleBots, can you even break even? I mean, you came in second place. You obviously hammered a couple of checks.
You know what happened was they took a dozen of the most popular robots and made toys out of them.
Merchandising.
And so I got a cut of that, as did, all the other guys. But considering how much I spent on developing the robot, this is over, several 4 year span. I just broke even because titanium ain't cheap.
No, it is not.
So
I like the idea of him getting a job later. Well, Grant, I see here, I'm not gonna lie to you, your resume is very impressive. But bad news, the guy who came in first is in the other room.
So that's right.
We're gonna hire him. Again, very impressive resume.
There's a bunch of guys now in truth, there's a bunch of former BattleBots champion guys and guys that placed that work at a consulting company that does prototypes for military and whatever companies. Sweet. They're like a think tank. Mm. And so it's kind of like I call it the famous Robot Builders Club. And we have lunch. They're not far from here, actually.
Well, it's interesting in terms of a real – here comes a football reference. So be prepared to doze off. But
Grant and I will grab a smoke.
They used to have these things called punt, pass, and kick competitions. And they do it at the halftime of the football game. Yeah. And they do it for teenagers and nine-year-olds. And the idea – the reason it was a punt, pass – and kick is they want to go who's the best overall potential football player?
Sure, that guy can throw, but how well does it kick?
Right, and all that. So, in a weird way, BattleBots is a sort of punt, pass, and kick competition for engineers and inventors and whomever's because you go, here are the rules. Can't weigh more than 300 pounds. What else? I don't know. Can't emit gas. The noxious gas.
No explosives.
No explosives. No fire. And you're like, all right, what else? That's it. Well, what do you want to do? Well, go ahead. Go figure it out. And then you get the spinners and the rammers and the whatever. But it really is a way to go, who's the smartest and who has the most ingenuity in this room? Because our rule is you can't go over 300 pounds and you can't explode.
And
other than that, do whatever you want. And you see stuff that's... it's doomed to fail as it goes out there.
Yeah.
Like you go, oh,
how's this going to go?
That thing made of sand and marzipan. Oh, I know medieval castles should strike fear, but they don't.
Is that macrame?
And then the one, it's a macrame owl.
Macrame bot didn't do well.
The ones that never do well are the ones that have the minions, the little flying drones that come with it. Like the, those never.
Entourage.
Mainly because no one knows how to fly those yet, so they just always sort of buzz around and then get caught in their own fire burst or whatever it is. But it is a real just IQ test for engineers, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it has to work in the arena. And there's a huge difference between designing something in a computer and having it work inside the battle box, because it's a punishing environment.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't test ahead of time, that was one of the big things that I was a really big proponent of. And whenever I would consult, it's you have to try your design out. And there, in truth, in those days, there was a show at Easter and one at Thanksgiving. She had did two major competitions a year, which is barely enough time to do a redesign. And so your instinct is to keep designing and kind of, you know, make your build envelope all the way up to just before the competition. But you can't do that.
Yeah.
You have to test. You have to punish it.
They speaking of testing, Jimmy and I went and did it when it was back on Comedy Central as the Comedy Central guys. And I had some experience like flying like remote control airplanes or something. So they said, well, you can work the thing. And it was our robot, which they just gave us, you know, against like Chinzilla, I think it was Jay Leno.
Yeah, it was a Leno bot. Yeah.
Jay Leno had a robot.
Right. Yeah.
And
like a scooper kind of thing, right?
Yeah. The chin was a scoop.
And so like they got us into the Lucite cage and they're like, all right, we're going to get started. And I was like, all right. And they handed me a remote that was pretty familiar, like the kind you'd fly the remote controlled planes with. And I remember they'd go, look, the stick on the right, push that forward, it goes forward, you pull it back, it goes backwards. I go, okay, I'm just giving a little test, and turn right, turn right, turn left, turn left. So I go and I push it forward and it goes backwards. And I go, huh? And they go, and then I pull it backwards, it goes forward. And I go, wait a minute, what's going on here? And they go, oh, it's flipped over. The bot, which had 10 inch.
Works on both sides.
Yeah, it had 10-inch saw blade tires or something was sitting in a way that it was flipped over. So forward meant backward and backward meant forward. And I was like, we should flip it over right way, right? And they're like, we don't have time for that. Here we go. And I was like, well, this is going to be – I'm not going to be very effective at all if everything is exactly reversed. Like, I don't know how fast you could turn a hot lap at Laguna Seca. If when you turn right, it means you go left. Yeah. And when you turn left, it means you go right. Now,
and
to
brakes
break, push the accelerator pedal down. Like, it's going to take my mind just a few short years to figure this out. And they're going, 5, 4. And I'm like, we're never going to beat. We might beat Conan on a good day, but we're not going to take Leno out. Not Chinzilla. Not now. And I remember that, like, I thought, this is TV, isn't it? And, and all I did was look like I was insane because why is he going backwards? What's he doing? He should be. And it was like,
You're like, oh, that's a clever strategy. It looks like he's running away. He's drawing him in.
Adam has mastered retreating. He's off mic.
They're backwards.
Oh,
look at that.
Be careful and go crazy. You can't go crazy either.
Oh, that's Treasure Island.
Yeah. Which one? This one? Right.
Again, I don't know the gay lifestyle.
There's two of us for Jimmy just abandon his radio control and actually
attack
the driver.
That's against the rule.
We don't allow it.
Chinzilla.
Let's go down for the start.
Chinkilla,
of the
actually.
Chinkilla.
We present a 3-on-1 challenge.
Is that a buffer?
Again, I don't know, Gabe.
Introducing in the middle of the arena, a robot so devastating that he demanded to fight 3 robots at the same time. Jay Leno's infamous Chinkilla!
I don't know. He looks a little tired. I've seen a lot of Chinkilla. Is he
here
up for this fight?
Here now are the opponents. In the red corner, driven by Comedy Central's robot combat enthusiast and host of The Man Show, Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla.
And by the way, now would be Jimmy Kimmel,
Ginzu.
And then he'd count to 15 Mississippi and then go, and Adam Carolla.
And behind me, Cool Robots Christian Carlberg presents the Killer Dreadnought!
Magic the Gathering insignia.
All right. I don't want to see sponsors. Anymore. It's going to get painful.
Sponsors, yeah.
So, beside your own, who do you remember? So you're in that whole class with the Son of Wyachis and the Ziggos and the Vlads.
Oh, yeah. Biohazard was a big
one. Oh, yeah.
Vlad the Impaler. Those were two of my favorites.
Was there ever any sticky situations about, obviously, you're putting this thing together. It's got a pneumatic hammer that comes down with a ice pick on the end of it. I mean, obviously, if that thing ever hits your hand, it's going to go right through it,
yeah.
Right?
No,
I mean,
no hesitation at all.
Instant stigmata.
Instant.
Right. Instant stigmata. Obviously, you have to be careful, but was there ever any situation where something malfunctioned?
No. Thankfully, I mean, having been there from 1999, which was even before it was on the air, it was like this kind of, even before that was Robot Wars, which is an underground event.
Fight Club.
Yeah. It's like Robot Fight Club. And in the pits, it used to be very, very dangerous because people would just work on their, they're in a rush between matches. They're trying to fix the robot and they wouldn't take the precautions like getting the robot up off its wheels. They just start working on it.
Yeah. And also, when you fly these model airplanes, you realize there's only a certain amount of frequencies. So if someone turns their radio on and you turn your radio on, you could be controlling their plane or robot or whatever it is without knowing it.
Which has happened.
It's unsafe.
Yeah.
And they had to institute a radio impound. So you had to go check out your radio with a frequency clip. And there was a guy whose job it was to make sure that nobody else uses your frequency.
Mm. Wow.
I've seen fires. I've seen robots, somebody short out a high voltage system and cause it a giant flash in the pits, not like two pits over from me. It used to be very, very dangerous. And then people learned.
I got to say, I've been studying about you and learning about the Lucasfilm stuff and all the various things. But I just sort of stumbled into this. Whole robot business. I had no idea that you were so steeped and immersed in this.
I do. I live and breathe robots.
How far away are we from robot fighting? And I don't mean wheeled robot fighting.
Real steel.
But I just mean, real steel. Yeah, Hugh Jackman.
That's right.
Stuff. There's, there was a show, last year, or maybe it was a year before that, it was essentially Real Steel. It was a robot fighting league. And they would fight each other on camera. And I know the guy who built them, Mart Zutrakian. It's a friend of mine. And he built really sturdy robots. The problem is, when you see these robots fighting each other, it doesn't look as incredible as it is in real life. It just looks like they're kind of hitting each other.
Rock 'em, sock 'em.
But and you would think in your mind you want to see heads flying off and arms flying off. But it's hard with robots fighting each other.
You have a real bloodlust, Grant.
Well, you just want to give the people what they want to see.
You all Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
What the people want to see is a homeless guy dropped off in the cage and you and Ziggo and Son of Wyachi going after this guy. And if he can make it 5 minutes, we'll give him a 40-ouncer and we'll let him, we'll let him go on his way. Oh, yeah, we are watching now the show where the robots are fighting. But
these things are punching. I mean, they can punch the side of a car in, through a door, and they're punching each other. And the thing that actually made it more visceral is that they have hydraulic fluid. And so when they break an actuator, you see like hydraulic fluid spewing out.
Yeah. But you're right, because they're both so tough, you don't get to see the impact.
Exactly. I mean, they're hitting each other, but they're made so well that they're not falling apart as you would expect. Right.
The God, this is just what the terrorists think we're doing.
But
all
know, with the giant robots, I was consulting on a team called Megabots, and these are the guys that are building giant two-story robot to – they challenged Japan to a robot competition, which was supposed to happen at the end of last year, but it's going to happen.
Really?
And so these are – you know, this is more like what people want to see with robot jocks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, transforming. These and so they're still working on it, and – hopefully they'll have that competition this year.
Wow. So we're going to take on
Japan. Mm-hmm.
And then later, the winner takes over Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually takes over the government.
That's the prize. Hi.
Hi. You thought the Chupacabra was bad. Move over. Giant robots coming into town. I'll take care of those drug lords. All right. The show, White Rabbit Project, tons of fun stuff like, you know, recreations and, God, there's one. Now, what you went down to the Salt Flats and we're going after a speed record on one of them. Can you tell us about that? Or I say Salt Flats, but I don't know where
We were there was the whole episode is about speed. And, you know, kind of like fastest things in the world, but not regular things. And so I had the fastest radio-controlled car in the world, the second fastest. They're going after the world record. And you think, well, a radio-controlled car, you know, we're familiar with that. It's a thing about 18 inches long, does over 200 miles an hour.
Wow.
It's so fast you can't even track it. The guy has to get on a lift so he can track it down the runway.
What are the rules? You have to make two passes and an average speed?
Yeah, two passes, one in one direction, one in the other direction, with laser timers. And if you're going for the world record, you have to fly in an adjudicator, an official adjudicator from Guinness, from New York, to wherever it is that you're trying to
do. We had to do that for this podcast. I kid you not. Like, we wanted the world record, the Guinness Book of World Record, and then, like, you got to fly the guy in because otherwise we're going to, you know, if we go out to talk to every Yahoo who thinks he's got a record on something, we'll be out of business. Got to buy, you know, hotels and tickets and everything else. So, yeah, you got to pay for these guys. And they come out. Now, is in the world of speed in terms of full-scale automobiles, there are categories. There's rear-wheel driven, engine, transmission, differential, axles, and things like that. And then there's rocket-powered, which is the thing just coasts, and it's a giant rocket that just powers it with no transmission or anything like that. Is this thing powered by a bottle rocket, or does it have a motor, and does that motor go through a transmission, and is that part of the rules?
I believe that the rules for this one are radio control, first of all, battery-powered electric motor, and there might be a separate category for gas. I'm not sure.
Right.
But the guy that he was trying to beat was also electric-powered.
Mm.
So, and the other thing is, it has to be maneuverable before and after.
Wow.
Right.
So you have to be
you
able to like,
burn up on impact.
Turn in a circle. You can't like
see. I have another
across.
Category. It's not powered by the rear wheels or powered by gas or electric or rocket. It's whose wife is more pissed off. See, I like to do that. Yeah. Like when I see the guys who are into drag boat racing, and then the guys that are into tractor pulling with the five blown Hemis. On the tractor, they have a tractor that they have $272,000 into, but it's worth $18,000. And now I'm going to include the radio-controlled speed record car guys. Whose wife is more pissed?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I know wives that are like reasonably perturbed that their husband's spending a little too much time in his roto league.
Yeah, fantasy football.
A little too much with the fantasy football. He's on the computer a little too much with the fantasy football
every
guys.
Every Sunday from
day right. But the guy who never leaves the garage because he's either building a drag boat, a tractor to pull a weight of nothing, by the way. It's not like, well, we pulled over 1,000 refugees last year, sweetie. How can you argue with that? No, you just have a big sled with a weight on it that just goes forward that is just designed to stop you from pulling. Or the radio-controlled speed record guy.
Yeah.
I feel like it's – see, on one hand, in the drag boat racing, you can get killed, but that could be a plus for a lot of the wives.
Nice insurance policy.
Hammer that insurance policy. The tractor pull guy's like, you got five blown hemis and you're blowing a head gasket every pull.
Right. If you're doing the tractor, you probably have a barn or some large amount of space.
Yeah, but the car, I don't know. Oh!
Ooh.
The car, the radio control car guy?
Right.
Single.
Can't
land
in
a lady. Cannot get a lady. There you go.
This guy was married, and he was building it in his garage. And he was also, I think his wife knew what she was getting herself into, because he's like a world-ranked radio control guy in other, not just speed, but around the track.
Once you're world-ranked, it's
known.
Different.
He's known.
So she knew what she was getting into.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at least she knew going in. The guys, the craziest is, well, not the craziest, but they have, in Florida, they have a Top Gun, but with radio controlled planes, and they have turbine jets going all day long. And if anyone's ever really seen turbine jets fly, miniature, they sound exactly like a fighter jet. They do insane things. We should be way more impressed by these guys. They go 300 miles an hour. And when they spool them up, they just spool up and they just take off and the gear comes in and stuff. I mean, the amount of work and time involved with that is insane.
Oh, yeah. And these are tiny, tiny actual jet engines, turbine engines. And it's the scale is incredible, and they're so fast.
They're the size of a thermos.
Yeah.
Like an old school lunch pail thermos.
That's crazy.
But they go over 100,000 RPMs. Gary, just for fun, and take your time, and there's plenty of stuff on YouTube.
SR-71?
Just those things firing up, and find one that's in the pits, so to speak, because you hear one just fire up and spool up, and you guys, being a podcast, tell me at home if it doesn't sound like you're just on the tarmac and there's a Learjet or a fighter jet that's fired up and is spooling up.
I wonder if they tap these guys for the military, because so much of it's remote control. They clearly know what they're doing.
Oh, boy. Now, I mean, in order to operate something that's going 250 miles an hour past you, and these things, they put a gallon of gas on them. They don't really glide very much. There's not much wing to them or anything. Everything is swept. I mean, it's really crazy. Gary, you'll find that. All right, let's just listen to the thing spool up, if you can find that, Gary. Anyone want to guess where they make the miniature turbine engines? Mm. All right, I'll give you three guesses. Jamaica.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The aforementioned Mexico.
Okay.
Germany.
Mm-hmm. This is
now,
a
I'll give you some time.
Should
I'll
write
some
down?
Time. Yeah, copy
down.
You better write it down.
I have two guesses.
Of course they make it in Germany. That's a miniature model jet
insane
engine that propels those things at 250
it's
miles an
badass
hour. It is pretty badass. All right. Oh, man. Let's just do a little bit of news, shall
sure,
we?
Sure, let's do it.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Grant, your robot stuff is cute, but can you put a tarp over a sign? Think about that. The guy who turned the Hollywood sign into the Hollyweed sign might have revealed himself by slapping his signature on the evidence, according to TMZ. Zach Fernandez, who goes by Jesus Hands on social media, had his handle all over the iconic sign the day the recreational pot became legal in California. He's also taking credit for it on Instagram and other social media posts. Fernandez has not been nabbed, but cops are on the hunt. Whoever did it faces misdemeanor trespassing charges. Here's a clip of Fernandez bragging about the feat online.
Okay, so the mission's like 95% complete. No, it's probably like 50% complete. But keep an eye out and have a safe new year.
Mission completed. Welcome 2017. I feel great. I'm wishing you all a beautiful year.
What did he do to the sign? Turn it Halloween or something?
Yeah, basically just wrapped a black tarp around the bottom of the O's. So it says Hollyweed. Because now recreational pot is legal.
Call me old-fashioned, but I miss the days when people would just kill themselves by jumping off of the sign.
It's very romantic.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the ladies.
Jilted starlight.
Dreams didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. I'm glad he didn't do actual damage to the sign. I'm glad it was just a
harmless prank.
Yeah. And they had it down because we woke up, because I live near the sign in Beechwood, and we woke up and heard about it. And by the time we'd run out there to take a picture, it was gone. It was like already halfway down.
Yeah, they said about 10:45 they started taking it down.
It was down quickly.
I used to live up Beechwood, too, and I could just see it from my bedroom back in the day. So, although I wouldn't wake up before noon, so they probably would have had it down. It was fun. You can go hike around, and what you find is you can hike like a sort of fire trail, horse trail that goes behind it up to, I don't know, the world's coolest fire station, because there's an Olympic-sized swimming pool up there. Mm. And I'm not sure why there's a big swimming pool up there, but there is a big swimming pool up there. And then there's also this one. Once every 12 and a half years, I attempt to do something like quasi-romantic that seems like something a husband might do.
Are you almost due?
Almost.
Almost, okay. A
couple years.
Another couple.
On our on Lynette and my anniversary, must have been about 10 years ago, I'd heard that if you went up Beechwood Canyon, they have a horse ranch at the top. And if you get on one of those horses, you can take a ride over the hill to this Mexican hacienda, and you can have drinks and Mexican food, and then ride the horses back to the little horse ranch, which was at the top of Beechwood. And anyone who's under the Hollywood sign lives up Beechwood somewhere. So I surprised her, and because she rode horses growing up. She used to go with her dad and had a little outfit and everything, and her dad would go with her and rent the horse and took riding lessons and everything. And I said, all right, good news. I got a surprise for you. And we got in the car and we drove up there. And I said, I know how much you love horses, and this is going to be excellent, right? Congratulations. Happy anniversary, whatever you say.
Congratulations on marrying me.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And she said, yeah, these are rental horses. And I said, yeah, aren't all horses rental horses? Like, I don't know anybody owns. I know people lease horses. I don't know. Only Shatner owns horses. And she said, yeah, but these ones are like, these ones aren't good because they go back and forth all the time and whatever. And I went, so do you want to do this? And she's like, not really. And I was like, good, let's go.
Wow.
We went home. I beat off and looked at the Hollywood sign. It was awesome.
Great was story. Like,
the greatest gift you've ever given me, woman, is the gift of not living. So she was like, I don't want to do this. I was like, me neither. Good. All right, let's go home.
Yeah.
We got two TV sets.
Yeah.
Let's go. And that's what we did. Wow. Turn around and went home. I lived up that Beechwood Canyon for like 8 years. I always heard about the horse trail up there, and I never gone. I did it one time, and Lynette said, let's go. And I said, I'm right in front of you. And that was the end of that. Well,
be sure to keep us abreast of your next romantic venture.
Grand gesture.
We're not going to go in a hot air balloon. How about that?
Going to drive to Temecula? Not get in it?
We're not going to frolic in the strawberries.
Over not wine country. Yeah. But they do have a little market up there.
Yeah.
And they take credit.
Oh, they do.
You can run a little account with them, and they'll like deliver the groceries
That's
and stuff.
Delightful.
It's a little bit of old school Mayberry up
market.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They took credit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, I don't know if they take credit as much as you not having your wallet and going, But yeah, they will take
it.
A little credit. Right.
That's cool. Well, the concert industry publication Pollstar has released its list of the top 10 earners for worldwide concert tours of last year, 2016. I'm wondering if you'd like to guess who made the list. Top 10 musical earners of 2016.
Just musicians or like stand-ups included? Too?
Just music. Okay.
I must say I was half hearing this on a radio this morning, and so I know, but now the question is how much was I listening? I wasn't thinking that this would come up again. I'm going to say number one was Bruce Springsteen at 256 million or 254 million?
Way off, 268.
Oh, 268 wow. million. So then number two was like Beyonce, 254 or
really
something.
Listening.
Something like that,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, this, by the way, when I talk to my wife and she goes, I told you we were meeting him at 6:30 for dinner. And I go, you said 6 o'clock. I told you 6 o'clock. I go, you said 6 o'clock. Believe me, if I hear it, usually this. I wasn't even paying attention to this.
And
you
still
right.
do it. So
all right, Bruce was number one.
You got one and two.
Made me angry. Mm-hmm. Beyonce was number two. Yep. Now, three was the Rolling... No, I know Celine Dion's in there. I know the Rolling Stones are in there.
They're 9 and 10.
Guns N' Roses has to be on there because they toured.
Guns
N'
Roses
charging,
is five
charging
for
ton.
Some reason or something up
four.
There. Four.
Way off.
The thing that was interesting is like Celine Dion... I'm trying. Oh, that it's also about calories burnt because I think it was like the Rolling Stones, which were number. I'm sorry,
they were nine with 90.9 million.
Yeah, they only did like 12 gigs though. Some
that's
other
like,
people
like
were
the
doing
per screen average.
Yeah, right. Per screen average is very high.
And
right.
I don't know if she's still doing it, but I would assume Celine Dion had a residency like in Vegas.
They weren't. I don't think you would count your residency.
Oh, okay.
It's how many
okay.
weekends you would go
gotcha,
out.
Gotcha.
That's what she calls "wham," walking around money, where she goes. She's making 50 mm-hmm. million in
sure.
Vegas, but you go out and pick up another 86 million or whatever it is and change.
Sure. Yeah.
Going out and doing those events. I remember the Stones. I don't know how many they did like 12 gigs or 16 gigs.
Desert
or something.
Trip or what? Two of them.
Right.
Four of them.
Adele must be on there. The top.
Adele is number five.
Yeah, five.
Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Right.
I was actually surprised by number three. I just personally, they're not really on my radar. Number three, Coldplay.
Oh, Coldplay. Yeah.
I was a little surprised about that. Six, seven, and eight, Justin Bieber, Paul McCartney, and Garth Brooks.
Oh, yeah. Paul
Garth
McCartney.
Brooks is still around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and, Chris
and
Gaines
McCartney and just never stops earning.
Nope.
God. Yeah.
Really went for it. So there's your top burners 2016.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Fine. People go out, make money.
Yeah.
I got no problem with it. Has McCartney let any gray creep in around his temples yet?
We'll
starting
to check
anger
on
me.
It's a new year.
A dusting around the ears, yeah.
Did anyone here see any of those concerts? I saw Adele.
I was at Desert Trip.
Was that? Oh, that was the old Cella thing?
Yeah, old Cella. Yeah.
How was Adele?
Adele was awesome. Adele was a great show. I mean,
great voice, right?
It was just her, a few backing musicians, like literally in the background. It wasn't the whole thing, the stage show with the dancers. I mean, her voice is the star. She's that talented, at least as a singer.
I can't imagine her with background dancers to Hello.
No, there's a little video show on the screen, and there was the musicians. But man, she's the star.
She's destined to be a chubby chick.
She's fighting it.
Yeah, but she's got a problem.
Yeah.
She's got the Kirstie Alley syndrome.
Big face?
Mm-mm.
Oh, no, other way around, yeah.
She's got the cleft in the chin with the nice face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What happened to Kirstie Alley is she ballooned up, but her face never changed.
Yep.
For the first 100 pounds, she still looked like Kirstie Alley,
right.
But everything around her.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, you just start dressing like a founding member of the Fleetwood Mac or something. You start putting on more and more layers, more and more flowing stuff. But when you go on Ellen and you see yourself, you don't go, oh, my God, I've packed on a bunch of weight, because you see it in your face. Yeah. When you go and do a talk show, it's the first thing you'll notice. They put the camera sort of down low. You're leaning back in the chair and you go, oh, my God, I have a huge head. What happened to my head? I got to stop eating so much. Kirstie Alley, she got from like 135 to over 200 pounds and never looked at herself at a talk show and went, oh, my God, what's going on? Oh, you just wear bigger, flowier, darker stuff.
Smart.
Her headshot never changed.
Adele has got that thing. And if you don't believe me, the chicks who traditionally have the eating disorders in Hollywood, the Juliana Rancics of the world and stuff like that, their head is big and their body isn't. And if they put on if they're not insanely underweight, their head looks big on camera.
They're called lollipop heads.
These are my theories, Grant.
A real term.
But I'm telling you, check it out. If you find out any of the chicks that had the eating disorders, they're all the ones that put on 10 pounds and 9 goes to their head.
Mm-hmm.
Kirstie Alley's head stayed the same size while her ass got as wide as Son of Waiachi.
Timely.
Who's back, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the new series, yeah.
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 Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't keep them away.
Mm-hmm.
heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
Big champion.
All right. One more.
The new Celebrity Apprentice with Arnold Schwarzenegger taking the boardroom reins from Donald Trump premiered Monday night on NBC. Boy George, Carney Wilson, and Motley Crue singer Vince Neil. By the way, who sounds exactly like Sam Kinison, I realized yesterday. Mm. Yeah, just
you guys,
that
maybe it's just me from doing that show, but so is the, you know when they do the, like, the morning show jocks are like, who's the new crew coming on? And they go, a boy, George, oh boy. And then they go, Vince Neil, oh boy. And then they spit out the next name, George Takei. And they go, oh, they're really scraping the bottom of that. So you can't even call them. So, well, you've heard of them.
Right.
Yeah.
They were iconic at one point.
Right. You can't get Matthew McConaughey. You can't get the guy who, lead from
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Yeah.
Like
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Probably not going to get him.
Ironically, couldn't think of the guy's name.
No, but I mean,
yes,
you're not getting A-listers. Right. You need 13 or 14 people. You are going to end up with some names you've heard from the past. Like, you can't do the eye rolling on everything. You don't get Bradley Cooper on Dancing with the Stars. Mm. Like, what do you expect? Yeah. You're going to get a real housewife of New Orleans. Like, that's just how it works, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
You're right.
All right.
Well, they did the show. They did the premiere Monday night. Second challenge was to write a song and record it and produce a music video for Trident Gum. Here's who got cut first, complete with two new catchphrases. You're fired's out. These are the new catchphrases.
Therefore, Connie, you're terminated.
Wait.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Oh, who could have ever seen it coming?
Yeah. Of course.
Had to be both.
Carney Wilson gun.
Carney Wilson was scraping the bottom of the barrel now.
Got the first chop.
And the first challenge was a jingle?
Yeah, for Trident. Yeah.
Wow, I feel like that's Carney's wheelhouse. You know what I mean? Like, she's musical.
Yeah, she was in Wilson Phillips.
Yeah.
Vince outranked her.
Mm. Oh, were they both leading the team leaders?
Yeah, I believe so, right?
For what it's worth, Motley Crue had more catchy songs than Wilson Phillips.
Oh, hold on.
Ryan.
I'll go toe-to-toe.
Hold on. I found that record inspirational. I wouldn't buy it, but my roommate Ralph bought it.
No!
I would sneak it into my player. Yes, I would.
Are you gay?
I was going through a very difficult period in my life.
You're gay for saying that.
I used to listen to that Hold On song, and I'd think, hold on.
One more day.
Release me.
Are gay.
Oh. Yes. I'm sorry. I stand by that album.
Great song.
Yes. Thank you. So, the team leader doesn't always have to get the boot.
No. Well, you tell us, right?
The
project manager, sometimes they get thrown under the bus. Sometimes they find somebody else.
Right. And you'd think if it was writing a jingle for Gum that
Couldn't
she'd be
it.
The... Mm-hmm.
It'd be upper alley.
All right.
Maybe the person who sang it was tone deaf. Maybe she was...
So that's on now.
Back. Yeah. Monday nights.
I keep seeing spots for Celebrity Match Game, which I'll be in coming up, but I've just seen them. I haven't really heard them, or I'm not sure. I think that's coming back too. Hey, Gary, see if you can find out whenever the hell I'm going to be on that show just for shits and giggles. All right, let's bring it on.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Grant, his show, White Rabbit Project, this thing looks spectacular, man. And it's streaming now on Netflix, and you can binge watch it because it's all 10 episodes are up, right?
All 10. You can watch them in whatever order you want, however long you want. We do heists, incredible jailbreaks, World War II weapons.
It's really fun and it's really intense. So go check out Grant's show. And until next time, this is Adam for Grant, Gene, and Bald saying. Mahalo.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And that was Mythbusters' Grant Imahara. Rest in peace. That clip from 2017.
Really tragic. He was one of my favorite dudes on the show. He also was involved with that show Adam loved on Comedy Central, Battle Bots, and like he did that like professionally. I don't know if he worked on the show itself or he was just operating with the robots, but that was a whole other interesting aspect of his life as well.
Yeah, and taken far too soon. Let's get
and
going.
And the Dos Equis guy, not as much of a tragedy, even though he's still living.
Yeah, he's the least interesting. Most ironically named guest.
That's what Adam got into. Yeah, he was not... none of us were happy with that interview. Great interview. Awesome.
Yeah, we played before in Classics. Check it out somewhere in one of our previous episodes. Now, let's go on with our final clip. We're gonna end this with a Rotten Tomatoes game.
The 67th installment of the game. This episode is Adam Carolla Show 1745. Harlan Williams, not in this portion. Just Matt Atchity, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop. January of 2016. Check it out.
All right, Matt, let's do this, man. Little bit of bragging, but it'll be very Rotten Tomato centric. Somebody tweeted me this. I got all the Oscar nominations, and Matt always says, well, rotten's good or fresh is good, but look at the score.
Oscar nominations for best
documentaries. Look at the score, meaning not 87% or 65%, but the what out of five?
Mm. Right, the average rating.
Because you can have a lot of C's.
Two and a half out of five might be fresh, or three out of five.
Yeah, 60%, I think. So you could have a bunch of C-minus movies and have 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. But he says, look at the score. Somebody tweeted me this, and I looked it up, and I thought, oh, nice. So I looked up all the docs and all the Oscar docs. Winter.
All the documentaries nominated for Best Picture, Best Documentary this year.
Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom.
You guys seen that?
I haven't seen it
yet. It's a non-stop laugh riot.
I saw it. It's a bit heavy. it's been intense.
It's getting a 4.5 on Rotten Tomatoes. Out of 5. Yeah. Pretty damn good. Amy's getting a 4.2. Cartel Land gets a 4 out of 5. The Look of Silence, 4.3. And What Happened, Miss Simone, gets a 4 out of 5. The Newman Doc gets a 4.6.
Winning.
Ooh.
Winning. Oh. Yeah, higher than all of them.
There you go. Winning.
Nice.
Have you seen Amy? It's a good movie. It's nice that you get
I like that
than,
a lot.
Yeah, it's well done.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that shall be corrected over the Academy.
Yeah.
Ooh, me and absolutely. Jada Pinkett sitting it out this year.
Exactly.
I'm pissed too, sweetie. This white boy's pissed.
We sure are pissed, aren't we?
Or are you going to rewrite your whole monologue like Chris Rock?
Yeah. All right. Let's play the game.
All right, so last week saw the latest film from the great Robert De Niro, arguably probably the finest actor working in movies for the last few decades, but Bad Grandpa, Dirty Grandpa, sorry, not so good.
Heard things.
Yeah.
But, Freudian slip there, Bad Grandpa.
Bad Grandpa. Bad Grandpa I kind of liked.
No, I'm saying you called it bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're going to go through De Niro's filmography.
All right.
A lot of choices.
Yeah, high and low, too.
High and low.
All right.
We're going to start off with one of his bigger movies from earlier in his career. This is a 1974 film, Francis Ford Coppola's legendary continuation and sequel to his 1972 film. We're talking about The Godfather Part 2.
Good timing, because I just watched The Godfather epic. 4 hours of it.
Oh, yeah.
4 out of the 7 hours.
No breaks?
Well, everyone liked two more than one, I do believe.
Not this film reviewer.
I'm totally with you, Brian. Yeah.
Oh. But that seems to be the consensus.
People love Godfather 2.
All right.
There are people of the wrong opinion who think it's better.
Hold on.
I don't have a thought on it because I'm not sure if I've seen two.
He plays Vito.
I will.
Young Vito.
I will say Jesus, Godfather. But on the other hand, when the Godfather...
You still have not seen the Godfather Part
When the
two.
Godfather came out, it wasn't the Godfather. At least Godfather 2 was. But I'm saying... So we gotta, well, what I'm saying is for us now, the Godfather's the Godfather. Mm-hmm. When it came out, it's not like every critic...
It's another movie.
It's another movie that okay. might not... You know, because you think, oh, the Godfather, 100%.
Sure. It wasn't
a classic.
But
not everybody was there at the right. time, you know. All right, I'm going to say 92%.
I said 96. This is the only Best Picture winner that was a sequel, I believe. Well, unless kind of Silence of the Lambs. So.
Oh, and then Jaws.
And Jaws, yeah, The Revenge, yeah.
I also said 92.
Godfather Part II, certified fresh at 97%.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
Wow. All right. People have it at 97, too.
It is a great movie. It's not better than Part One.
All right.
We get people complaining about the negative reviews on this, like, oh, that Vincent Canby at the New York Times should stop writing.
Was that at the time?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's a contemporary review for that film.
Interesting.
Yeah, people complain. It's like, Canby's been dead for
Yeah, so he just stopped reviewing films.
Okay. All right. Next up, 1990 film that directed by the great Martin Scorsese, based on the life and times of FBI informant Henry Hill. And an adaptation of Nicholas Pileggi's best-selling Wise Guy. The movie is Goodfellas.
Now, again, I hope whoever gave this thing a negative review is dead. Because it's like, you don't like this, you don't like movies. Like to kick, my whole thing is like, if you don't like Goodfellas or you didn't appreciate it, then you shouldn't be reviewing movies because you have disdain for the art form.
Fingers not on the pulse.
Yeah. But that being said, somewhere in the 90s, but where? It was long. It was certainly long. So yeah. We had that
had
can
a
be
lot
a strike.
Of style, which can sometimes go against it with some film critics, especially in 1990. There's some older film critics from the 70s still around reviewing films.
I'm going to say what Brian said before, 96.
I played a hunt and said 95, although a 99 wouldn't surprise me.
I didn't think it would be better reviewed than Godfather 2, so I went 93.
We have someone on the nose.
What was 96, 95, 93?
Yes.
Okay.
Goodfellas is certified fresh at 96%.
Yes! Ah!
I started celebrating at 90 just because of that being an ironic joke. Yeah. Big 10-point deduction.
All right. In 1994, De Niro took a break from playing gangster characters and starred in an adaptation of a classic monster movie. He plays the monster. Created by the mad scientist Frankenstein in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
He did?
Yep.
Yeah. Huh. Was this Kenneth Branagh?
Yeah.
Starring and directed by Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm.
What year
is
this?
94. Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah. This is one of those, not sure. I don't think people loved it. They didn't hate it. It just didn't live up to whatever.
And didn't another one like this come out at the same time with Julia Roberts or something like that?
Mary Riley.
Mary Riley was the... Jekyll and Hyde story.
Coppola's Dracula come out around the same time? Okay, there was a whole...
Oh, this one's tough. So they liked it, but they didn't hate... They didn't love it. 64%.
I said 49. I saw this when I was younger, and I didn't enjoy it.
I don't remember it, honestly. I went 69.
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, rotten at 39%.
Oh, God damn it.
Wow, you got that, Brian.
Well, I was off by 10, but...
still a lot closer than us. All right, I got the five-point deduction and right on. We're right in there now.
All right, next up, 1995 film that sees De Niro collaborating yet again with Martin Scorsese and Joe Pesci, sees him playing Ace Rothstein in...
Favorite
Las
movie.
Vegas, and the movie is Casino.
Is this your favorite movie?
It's one of my favorite. Actually, my three favorite movies are on here.
I love this
I love
movie. Just couldn't.
Well done.
Did we just figure out? We figured out that Goodfellas was a 90. Huh?
You had to do it right on it, right? 96.
96. All right.
Now, Casino
God
was
it.
Long. That's like a three
yeah. This
movie.
Is long. Shit. Now, this deserves something in the 90s, but it's Scorsese on Scorsese crime.
Mm-hmm.
88.
Mm. I said 90.
I said 92.
Casino, certified fresh at 80%.
Damn.
Oh. I'm just going to leave.
See, people are There were. Do you know what this was? This was
a little too close and a little too soon,
and a little too long. Right.
And this is the coach. This is the coach's son syndrome, where the guy's probably the best or second best athlete on the team, and the guy, the coach, is being extra rough on him. He wants more out of him. Okay. He's being tougher on him than he would be on the other kids. It's just they're being tougher on him. And this thing in a vacuum is better than any movie that came.
Yeah.
5 years before it or after.
Debut movie. This is 100%.
Right, as a debut, but it is. I would argue this is not as tight as Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah.
No,
right? This one loses its way in a couple of ways. It's still good.
All right, Brian won 90. We should be all pretty knotted up here coming into the.
I kind of feel like I'm not involved.
Oh, not you.
Yeah, no. We say we all admit us and our balls.
Gotcha. That's right.
All right. Last up, this 1999 film finds De Niro kind of spoofing his typical gangster character, gangster who goes in for therapy with a psychiatrist played by Billy Crystal. The movie is Analyze This.
All right. The movie set out and achieved its goals, right? Like, it was what it was built.
Yeah. So good they made an Analyze That.
I'll say it's a good movie. I enjoyed this movie.
Right. But I feel like we all know the critics got a little stick in their butt with this kind of stuff.
They only like it so much.
Yes. I'm going to say 68%.
I said 79.
Didn't see it. Don't have high hopes. I'm saying 55.
Analyze This is fresh at 69%.
Wow. What did you say?
I said 68.
Damn.
Well, I think
that could have been the one that did it. That could have been the one that did it. Is that the last one?
Mm-hmm. That's the last one.
Gina with 64.
Thank you.
Adam with 34. And Bald Brian with 32.
Ooh. You gotta recheck those numbers.
Yeah, please do.
Hold on.
Calculation sheet, unless I got somebody's guess wrong.
Well, I remember the first one, we were a couple points off one another.
So Brian had one off on each of the first two guesses. Then you had five
did
off.
Did you give me my... Yeah. But I had the one on and going five
the,
off.
This is the saddest moment in all the podcast history.
Yeah, I know.
The third movie, you were at zero. Then you were 25 off with your guess on Frankenstein.
Right.
Brian was only 10 off. So
everyone has to have
12,
a lock bottom, I guess.
25.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next one, you were eight off. He was 10 off. And eight the final off. One... And the final one, you were one off. And then he was 10 off. The math
Shit.
Do you lose a timeout for not getting the call overturned?
Yeah, that's a technical foul. Gary, who won?
Rotten or fresh? Run those numbers over the house after the show. Run them by. And you be with them.
Adam, I can't help but blame you a little because remember you gave him that goddamn pep talk and it got him all fired up?
Yeah,
out of it.
It's two in a row now.
I hate that.
Yep. He's on a roll. Mm.
And that was the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Robert De Niro edition.
Yeah. I love those games. And thank you.
I love Adam's observations about Robert De Niro and how he's just kind of boring and like his talk show appearances are his like natural cadence. And it's very accurate. Adam's always on the ball with those observations.
Yeah, he always sees things that not very many people see.
Bruce Caitlin Jenner, 1998. I believe that is the record.
All right, let's finish this off with another quick reminder about Geico, because you know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. All right, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance. And this is the last day to celebrate Geicoween, although these savings are going to last you a lot longer than that. So just switch to Geico and save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Check it out, geico.com. All right, Corolla Classics returns tomorrow. So make sure to tune in for that by subscribing to Corolla Classics, the podcast. We'll see you there. My name is Chris Loxamana. That's Super Fan Giovanni.
All listener request edition tomorrow, Corolla Classics feed. Mahalo and get it on.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.